Welcome to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast, where we discuss all things money because whether or not we like it, money matters. In our last podcast, we were chatting to Impu, who was the winner of the 2022 Money Makeover Challenge. And today I'm joined by our Money Makeover runner-up, Zinzi, and her fantastic financial advisor, Pumzile Dube, who Zinzi refers to as her financial therapist. So welcome to both of you.
Thank you, Maya.
So, Zinzi, let's start with...
Thank you, Maya. Hi,
everyone. Hi, everyone. It's so nice to have you, and you're just such happy faces on today. So, Zinzi, I'm going to start with you. You know, one of the reasons you were selected as a winner was because of this massive transformation you went through during the challenge. Apart from meeting our financial objectives, which obviously everyone had to do just to get to the end point, you learned to have some really, really tough conversations and to hold people to account. And it was a very, very real story. And I just want to say again, thank you for sharing that story with us and to continue to share it with us. And of course, Pumzile, you in all of this, Pumzile has been your rock, your biggest supporter, but maybe just, you know, I think let's start with that. Let's start with just sort of why you joined the challenge and kind of what you saw as some of your biggest issues.
Okay. So when I joined the challenge, I felt like I was drowning. There was just so much going on. SARS debt. Yeah, not knowing how to have the conversations, owing lots of people, and thinking that I could actually do it, but not really doing it. Like that belief that, okay, I've got this under control, but not really having it under control. So yeah, so when I joined, I was like, okay, I need help and I should go get help.
And I think that was for us why we selected you actually for the challenge in the first place was the fact that you're an academic, you're well-educated, but you didn't know how to manage your money. And I think that's so true. We all think that, well, you know, it's an education issue, it's this issue, but actually, when do we ever learn about finances? And Pumzile, I know when you met with Zinzi, you phoned me and you said, Maya, wow, this is going to be challenging. Tell us about your thoughts at that point.
But, you know, from day one when we met, because everything was sent to me. I went through the profile and I was like, oh, okay, no, this is brilliant. I'm up for it. Then we did set up an appointment where we met up with Zinzi. Then, on that day, I'm telling you, after we finished, I was like, yeah, I was just taking deep breaths. But to me, one thing that I liked was her honesty from the onset, just to come up with everything and for me to be aware what was the challenge in front of me. And also talking to you, because after coming back, I was like, yeah, no, I took this whole challenge very light. But after speaking to you and you explaining to me the importance of me being there for Zinzi and the importance of me applying my experience and the soft skills and in making sure that we come up with solutions, then I was right now, I won't lie, there's nothing that I've enjoyed more than being part of this challenge. And the experience that I gained and the soft skills that one did gain, I'll really say thank you to City Press and also to APSA and to you, Maya, for always being there. Because if it was someone else, I would have just ran away. But I did stick throughout the challenge.
You know, Pumzile, one of my favorite things about Money Makeover is it's not just the candidate's journey, it's the advisor's journey. And this, yes, because you get thrown in with this like really big, like you've got 6 months to change someone's life.
Yeah,
you
know, just, yeah,
and
yeah.
And maybe just we'll do a quick recap here, Zinzi, for people who may not have followed your journey. So Zinzi, I get this application and I'm like, wow. Okay, so we've got SARS debt. So what happened is Zinzi was working as a freelancer and didn't know how tax worked. So, you know, your each company takes off 25%, but when you put it all together, your tax rate is actually much higher. So suddenly she had the SARS debt she wasn't keeping on top of. And she bought a piece of land that she was going to build on, but she couldn't afford to. And that was draining her. And there were municipal bills. But the one, Zinzi, that also was really struck us, and it has been a big thread of your story, was family owing you money. And this whole story of your brother. And I would like you to share that. And I know it's and I really do appreciate these are very personal stories. But whenever I tell someone or anyone reads your story, they all go, that is the story. That is what is happening to so many people. That is the story that's really, really resonated. So maybe just to share that part of the journey with us as well.
So yeah, with my brother, I think I before this challenge, I wasn't aware that it's a thing. Like, I wasn't aware that people are going through it. So my brother requested that I buy him a car because at that point I was in a better financial standing. He picked it out, and yeah, I did the finance for him, and the promise was, I'll pay you. So I'm sure if you've bought a car, you know it goes through your bank account. So yes, first month got out, no payment. Second month, nothing. So I continued paying for it because, yeah, well, it just went through my account. And he's my brother. He'd never do that to me. And yeah, until the pandemic hit, I lost my contract. My finances then became really, really bad. But every time I talk to him about it, he'd just be so nonchalant about it. No, you'll get the money. And it never happened. And I think I also was not maybe as tough with the conversations. It would be like a gentle nudge, a reminder, hey, that car money. You know now things are bad, that car money. But yeah, it until it got really bad. And yeah, still no payment. Family. Yeah.
And I want to just actually comment on that as well now, Zinzi, that, you know, you and I were having a lot of conversations around this. Pumzili was having conversations with you around this. And I mean, I said, well, I mean, basically the bank said, because you went to the bank and you said, I can't pay for this because it's actually not the car and I don't have the money. And they said, well, return the car. And you said, go to your brother and said, return the car. And he says, whatever. And Pumzili said, Maya, I was sitting there when she called him and he just ignores her. And I don't know what to do. And of course, the one thing that you should do in a state, like the technically correct thing to do is to report the car stolen. But you were very reluctant to do that. And I understand. I mean, that's not an easy thing to do to your brother.
Yeah, it really isn't. And I think that was the other thing, actually, because, I mean, in a sibling relationship, he knows that I'm not going to do anything that's very bad for him. So I'll always cover for him. He's my brother. And I think he was working on that as well. So I had to find another way to get my point across to say, look, this car needs to be paid for. I can't afford to do it. I'm not going to have you arrested because you're my brother. It's a car, but you need to pay for it. And yeah, that conversation and following through on it, because that's the other big thing, the follow through. Because I mean, the calls have been happening for a year with no change, but that follow through to say, okay, look, now something needs to happen. And when he saw that, okay, now I'm serious, then yeah, change began.
And you used your family to help you do this. And I think what was very interesting is you said to me that we all do this, right? So your brother, you and your brother, you are close. Let's keep it between the two of us. You don't want to embarrass him. You don't want to. And I think maybe Pumzili, I'm being a bit sexist here, but I think as women, we tend to be more like that. So we are caregivers, we're protectors, we, you know, shame poor him. And somebody can use that against us. And I think that was what was happening, was that you were scared to tell the rest of the family in case it embarrassed your brother. But then eventually you decided, because you were on this challenge and you thought, I'm in the newspaper, people. I'm telling people my story. I'm going to have to deal with this. And you went to your sister and you spoke to your sister and asked her for support.
Yeah. So, and I think being part of the challenge actually made it quite easy because, I mean, in a random chat, we were chatting about our family home and the budget there. And I kept saying, look, I can't keep doing this. And she was like, okay, but this is our responsibility. And I sent him a link to the first article. And then that opened the door up. Say, what? Okay, let me give you a call. And then she called me, and we just spoke about it. And yeah, just being able to open up to another family member, but also not have that feeling of shame and embarrassment. That, yeah, really, really helped a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And Pumzile, do you know, Zinzi says that when she, you know, when she started this journey and started sharing her story, she didn't realize how many people are in the situation. And you said it actually rang a few bells even for you. It was like, hold on, this is an issue.
No, that is very true. And the thing is, maybe sometimes when it comes to family, we take things very light. Then up until it just blows up. Because I mean, for over a year without the brother coming in, I fully understand how emotional Zinzi was the first time I met her. I'll be honest with you, there was no smiles in our first meeting. But when we started having conversation going forward and coming up with suggestions, and I know when it comes to family, you can't just put in police or call police because it's so personal. And we, even within siblings, you find that you're too close. One thing that I realized, Zinzi was too close to the brother. Yeah, now every time, and the brother knew that Zinzi won't just tell the big sis without him knowing. But I think her being part of the challenge gave her a courage and gave her the support that she needed in saying, you are not doing anything wrong. It's the right thing to do. Your brother, you have to tell your brother your current situation. Your brother is aware, but he keeps on. Because I remember when she called him, she just took it so light, and I was like, yeah, no, this I think we have to escalate this. And luckily, the big sister was there to make sure that she does intervene. And the good thing is now we're talking about a solution that did come through. And this is just something whereby everyone has to take into consideration in saying, don't suffer alone. Make sure that if you do, you have a good support structure within the family. If it's your elder brother not coming through, then you can talk to one of the siblings, and they might actually come up with a good proposal for you guys without even having to fight or you being in a financial difficulty.
I mean, the upside is he is now contributing to the car, and you know, things have improved. But Zinzi, you also had to have that discussion with the bank about the car, and I think that was another revelation for you, was, oh, you can talk to the bank, and they're not just this entity that's, you know. And I think that was it when you admitted to me when you entered, you said, I just ignore all the emails. SARS was emailing you, banks were emailing you, everyone's emailing you, contacting you, and you were just like, if I pretend they're not there, they will just go away. And you started, this was part of the process, was actually engaging with your creditors, engaging with people you owed money to. And talk us through a little bit about how empowering that actually was in the end of the day.
So, before May of this year, I was an ignorer of note. Phone calls, letters, anything. I'd hide my head in the sand. And it's for me, it's I don't know about it. I don't talk to anyone, so it doesn't exist. But with entering the challenge and actually being part of it, that engagement, that first step to say, okay, there's a problem. And I mean, if you just talk to someone, talk to SARS, talk to the bank. And I realized that it's people. The banks are people. Yes, the logos are there, but it's people who work at the banks who understand what's going on. The very same with SARS as well. You've got the consultants, and they understand. They are people. They know what's going on. So just being able to talk to someone and say, look, this is my current situation, especially with the car, explaining to them that, look, I don't have it in my possession. I'd like to give it back, but I don't have it. But what can I do in my position? And then you get someone who's able to help you and give you suggestions and say, okay, look, we can get a tracing company, but in the meantime, you do still owe us, but we can try and help. That's amazing. That engagement is amazing.
I love that. That engagement's amazing. Actually dealing with it and not sticking your head in the sand. And that's such a powerful, and I really hope, Zinzi, people take this from your journey, was the joy and happiness it brought to you that you were dealing with it. And I mean, I'm just having a quick look at what you've achieved. You know, you'd paid by now, you've already paid off sort of 22,000 Rand of that SARS debt already. You've paid up 33,000 Rand that was outstanding on the home loan. You've paid 22,000 Rand outstanding on car finance. And you've also made an arrangement to pay a little bit of something towards the City of Joburg debt, which you're still in a little bit of a dispute about, because just by the way to the listeners, but that what the City of Joburg is valuing her land at is literally double what she could sell it for. And in fact, she can't even sell it for that because she hasn't been able to sell it. So these rates are actually a really big problem on vacant land. So we are busy, Zinzi's in the middle of debating that. But all of these are conversations there. And Pumzile, I mean, how do you, you're from the bank. I mean, how big a difference does it make when somebody actively engages with you when they've got a problem?
Right. You know, that's very important, Maya. And one thing, I don't know whether it's a culture or it's something that is not so good, because you find that COVID, when COVID hits, no one was prepared for it. Then even during COVID, we did make some payment reliefs. But to fully understand, even after COVID, some people were not in the same position they were before COVID. Then one thing that I will say and I will encourage is for if you go through anything, because we still want you to be our client. You are still our client. Now, if you are we're going to try to call you and you are ignoring us, we're sending you emails, you are ignoring us, the consequences might be huge. You might get a judgment, then and that will ruin your future. You find that in the future, it's so hard for you to even get credit now. But if you just called us and said, right now, this is what I can afford. Like Zinzi said, you are speaking to people. Absa is just the bank, but at the end of the day, the person that's going to that you are going to consult, you might get hold of Pumzile or Maya, then, and I will even be able to make some professional suggestions and saying, this is what I think we must handle this, because don't think you are the only one. A lot of those things have happened before, and you are aware of them, and you know how to tackle them. Then, if you talk to us. And that's where solutions are going to come through, and you will feel relieved at the end of the day. I won't lie. That's one thing I can suggest in saying, don't run away from your creditors. Make sure that you communicate. They are aware of your current situation.
I mean, so really, really so powerful, just having that conversation and engaging. And one thing, Pumzile, I've noticed, you know, I've been a financial journalist for many, many years. Since COVID, the banks are even more open to conversations and to engage.
That's true.
They're very aware that life happened. You know, this was a real event. This wasn't just somebody who just doesn't feel like paying back their debt. And I think the banks do attempt to try and assist. And I think that's what we also, you know, we've seen throughout the journey as well. And funny enough, one of our other candidates, Sandra, she changed jobs and she had to take a much lower salary for a few months. And the bank, you know, agreed to both to pause both her mortgage and her car repayments on the understanding that this was a short, you know, a short intervention that was required. So absolutely, they really are. And, you know, Zinzi, we've spoken about the conversation you had to have with your brother, with your family, to opening up to all of them. That was a pretty, you know, difficult thing to do. You spoke to SARS, which is not an easy conversation to have. You know, when I get a letter from SARS, I always panic, even though it's got nothing to do with panicking. I don't need to panic. It's just, oh my goodness, what if you feel like they have this power over you, and they do actually in large degree. They can
take money
out your bank account. And I mean, that's what happened to you, Zinzi. The first thing you knew was they would take you got a new job, and they had garnished your salary.
Yeah. So you know, I'm so happy now. I'm back to employment, and I look at my payslip, and I think, what's this SARS? And it writes on there. It says SARS. I thought, okay, there's pay as you earn. What is this other SARS thing? And then I phoned finance at my company, and they're like, oh, no, we got an order from SARS. And I thought, oh, my goodness, they found me. and then, yeah, and then I thought, okay, I'm going to have to engage with them because, I mean, there's no running away from it. And even with that engagement with SARS, it was painless. It was someone who was like, okay, hi, ma'am, this is what we see on your tax number. This is how much you owe us. And I tried to explain, no, but I was paying tax and they were like, yes, you were, but it wasn't enough. And you've been ignoring us, so now we need to get our money back. Yeah, but it's a great experience. I was really afraid of SARS. I was afraid of the tax man, and but now it's I'm okay with SARS. I like SARS.
I'm gonna
I
send that. I'm gonna send that to the commissioner now. I'm gonna say, this is what somebody's just said. You can hire him for an advertising campaign.
I give
But
SARS the thumbs up. I mean,
the
they're
good
doing
thing
their
was,
job.
They're doing their job.
and it goes back to communicating. Communication is very important. It actually
Exactly.
goes back to that.
Exactly. I do still think that you're the only person I've come across as you like SARS. But there was that conversation. There was also you had to tell your son that he could no longer have swimming lessons because of course you had to cut your budget to meet all your payments. And also your and what I found also interesting was another very difficult conversation, which was that your the father of your child had stopped paying maintenance. And there was another thing you had to deal with.
So with that one, it's these personal things. It's one of those that you think, okay, I'm gonna, your responsibilities, but if you're not gonna own up to them, I'm just gonna do this by myself. Not realizing that it's actually hurting my son's lifestyle. So we have a parenting done through a lawyer. So I contacted the lawyer and said, look, is maintenance, but that hasn't been going on. So what's the next step? What should happen? And he's like, okay, look, I'm gonna give him a call. And it was just as easy as that. I gave him a call, month end, maintenance showed up in the account. I didn't even need to send the account details. Like, okay, maintenance right in. And
Again,
it's
yeah, another
just as easy.
conversation. That's it, just having the conversation again. And Zinzi, I think what you've just said is very, very powerful. I come across a lot of women who are raising children on their own. And they do just say, oh, it's just easier than having to get, to nag and get the money and all the rest of it. But your realization was that it's not for you, it's for your son. And your son can't have the lifestyle. He may not be able to go to the school that you choose for him or have whatever it is, material things that he needs that would better his life because his father is not contributing and his father is employed. It's not a because he's unemployed. And I encourage women really to let's take Cindy's story and say, you know what, it's not okay for your child. Maybe you don't want to have the interaction. Maybe you'd rather never see him again. But at the end of the day, you had a child together and he has a responsibility to that child. And what are you doing to the child if you're not following up on that responsibility? And I think a very, very powerful one. Like I said, since you had so many of these stories that relate to so much of many South Africans, actually. Kunzile?
Yeah, no, definitely, Maya. You know what I'm saying? It's so true about Zinzi's stories because it's what you see on a day-to-day basis happening. And sometimes you just take it light. Like she said, it was like, oh, okay, I can still work around my budget. But what about the stuff that the son loves? You see, sometimes I think, especially when it comes to the ladies, they must not put themselves there. They must just put the kid in saying, what about the kid? The kid will be getting more of this, but now he or she has to get less of the stuff that she or he loves. Then, and even us as fathers, I think it's high time we just take the responsibility for our doings and make sure that you are there for our families.
You know, Pumzile, that's I hope you start a little bit of a campaign on that because it's difficult for me to sit here and lecture, but if a man does it, if a man says, guys, come on, you've actually got to, you are responsible for this. You've got to, and it's a big issue. It sits with me as a quite a something that really bothers me a huge amount because I see it so often. And I think that we actually have a crisis in South Africa, actually around this. But maybe we should, that's another discussion. But yeah, really important. And just talking about children, though, one of the very important things we made every single money makeover candidate do is a will. In fact, it's like a 101. And Zinzi, I think it was very important for us as well, that because you're separated from the father, that you created a testamentary trust within yeah. your will, so that your son was provided for should something happen to you, that he, that the money was ring-fenced purely for his needs. So maybe, Pumzita, you want to take us through a little bit about this, because again, if you're a single parent, you're wanting to provide specifically for your child, a very important clause to have in your will.
That's so true, Maya. You know, a will, first of all, it's very important for each and every one of us to have a will. And even if you are married, community property, regardless, a will is very important. And in Zinzi's case, we had to make sure, because the father of the child is no longer there, like not in the picture, then we do create a trust that is going to kick in should she pass on. Then also the good thing is that Zinzi does have a good relationship with the big sister. Then the sister is also a guardian of the child. Then we want to make sure that even should anything happens to Zinzi, then the child is really taken care of. And there are some clauses that are included when drafting the will. And you will see, if you meet up with a professional, they will explain all those nice clauses that will be included in making sure that your son is protected against the father coming through at a later stage and saying, can I have access to the funds? And we know from our side, no one will have access, and those funds will purely be used for the benefit of the child. Mm-hmm. And a will, I would say, that's the first thing you have to do before you generate any asset, before you buy the car, because that car does not have beneficiaries linked to it. Then a will is important, because us as a bank and your family has to know what should happen to it should you not be there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely a must do for each and every individual. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And also important things like making sure that your life cover makes the estate the beneficiary and not the child.
Yes,
because if the child's the beneficiary, then it goes to the guardian. Yeah, it's all fine. So getting advice, you know, when putting a will together, especially if you've got a child, is really, really important. And Zinzi, you use this opportunity to talk to your family, your siblings, about having a will as well, because you've got family property that would be inherited, and there's a whole lot of implications on that. So maybe just, that was an interesting discussion I thought that you'd had, so maybe share that with us.
Yes, so when my mom passed on, we jointly inherited our family home, so it's under all of our names, the three of us, and we discussed, after I had spoken to Pumzile and we talked about the wills and we had a discussion with yourself, luckily that weekend we were together, and we just spoke about, guys, what happens to home if I pass away? Or my sister, for example, who's married, what happens if your husband wants to now pull out? Do we buy him out? What happens? What do you think should happen? My brother as well, does the property go to the kids? What is our decision? And yeah, it was a really insightful, deep conversation, because for us, we had just taken it lightly that this is just our home. I mean, it's legally under all of us, but we didn't think about what happens should something happen to me and my son is still a minor. What happens with my portion of it? Does it then become, does he not get anything? What if he's unable to pay any of the rates and levies and things like that? What happens? So we really had a good discussion, yeah. And also with regards to, okay, so what in your will, my siblings, with regards to the family home?
Yeah.
Your other assets aside, but what happens to this one that we share together? Yeah.
I think such an important conversation, Hebumzile.
Yes. No, definitely. Especially when this one is a family home. It's three people owning one home. And the minute I get married, I'm no longer there. Typical example, what if my spouse decides, no, we've got our own assets, I don't need anything to do with the home. Then you guys are forced to even sell it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, can you see, maybe one of the siblings is actually using that family home. Mm-hmm. And you know, with siblings, you can come up with some agreements whereby one can pay this month, next month not pay. But when an outsider comes into the picture, whole scenario just changes. Then it's very important, like what I also liked, what Zinzi just said, was to also ask the family members on what are they all saying regarding the home. Yeah, because that's very important, because you don't want to be the only one having that will, with clear instructions on what should happen should you not be there, but you find that your siblings are maybe don't even have it, or the siblings just say all my assets are going to my spouse. Then the spouse, because you don't know what the spouse thinks of the family home. Yeah, then it's something that is crucial, and it's something I think with Zinzi's case study, like from the beginning up until now, I would encourage each and every person to just go listen from the beginning on how things started, because now we might be discussing things that you don't fully know about. But if you just follow the journey from the beginning, you'll realize like each and every step that she went through and the things that she did. And like right now, we're talking about it, we're laughing about it, but before it was not like that. Then, and I do believe this will make a real difference to each and every individual going through the same thing.
I know, and I think that is, I have to stop for a moment and realize that everything we're talking about, all these conversations that happen, dealing with SARS, with brothers, with fathers of the child, of the wills, of all of that, was done in 6 months.
Yeah.
Hey?
I still can't believe that also, yeah.
Exactly, and I think that is it.
Yeah.
People think that this is going to take forever, that it's, but you
Yeah.
just commit to it. You deal with each thing as they come along, and look at this. You're transformed. And just to end off, Zinzi, I'm going to read back to you what you wrote to us in your application letter, and it was, I would like to learn the correct financial skills before I am 35. I know you are right now 34, and I think you've already got them. I think you've achieved your goal just on that alone.
Yeah, and I think more than that, I should have said I want to be braver for the change, because that's what it was. Just being brave about everything and saying, okay, I'm gonna try and fix as much as I can and learn and commit to it as much as possible. And yeah, I've learned so much about money. My goodness. I've learned a lot of management skills here.
Well,
Yeah.
fantastic. And thank you, Zinzi, for sharing your journey. I know it's not easy for any of you candidates to share a lot of personal stuff in the newspaper out there, but it's those journeys that really resonate. And thank you, Pumzile, for being there for her, for being her financial
Yeah.
and for getting her through this. So thank you to both of you for being part of this journey.
Okay.
Thank
Thanks
you
a lot,
so much. And
Maya.
thanks.
Dude.
Yeah.